Michelle's and Deborah.
Sorry, I'm not here, but.
Welcome.
A warm one.
Beautiful.
My name is Lauren F. and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Lauren.
Thank you, Tom, for asking me to be of service, and congratulations to all of the chip takers tonight. It truly is an honor and a privilege to be asked to be of service. My sobriety date is February 17, 2016. Today, I celebrate 7 months of continuous sobriety. And I cannot think of a better way to celebrate than with you all here tonight. I will be sharing with you what I used to be like, what happened, and what I am like now. Oh, don't start crying. Not yet. Please wait. I understand here in AA we have a singleness of purpose. However, I found my way to AA through my drug use. I apologize in advance for any discomfort this might cause you. But please keep in mind, this is my story. My drinking career began at age 13 and continued for 15 years. From the moment I picked up my first drink, my life changed. And little did I know that I would end up as a destructive tornado tearing through people's lives that Sit talks about in the Big Book. If you're unfamiliar with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, here it is. This is the text that has been used by many alcoholics over the years as a tool and an outline of a suggested program for members to follow as a resource to help recover from alcoholism. But back to the tornado. I was 13, and I was a confused child. My parents had already divorced, and I felt it was my fault. I just did not understand. My mother did the best she could with all of us kids trying to keep life in order. My older brother suffered from severe mental illness, which took up much of my mother's attention most of the time. I felt abandoned, unloved, and lost. Being 13, beginning to hit puberty, I had no understanding of what emotions I was dealing with as a normal transition in life. Yet, I tore myself down because I was not pretty enough, not thin enough, and not smart enough. Don't start crying, seriously. I was insecure with myself. My first drink that I recall was for my first communion. Now, in the Catholic faith, the first communion represents the body and blood of Christ. For me, this is also called wine. There is a process before receiving the first communion. You become baptized, attend catechism to learn about the faith, and have your first confessional with the Father to profess your sins. Once I got to confession, I lied, saying that I had never sinned in my life, go figure, just so I could hurry up and leave to drink the wine. I mean, no disrespect to any individual that is of Catholic faith by sharing this experience with you. This is just the beginning of my story. New Year's Eve that year, I had my first drunken experience. A new world was open for me. Consuming more than a sip of alcohol as I did previous made me feel warm, fuzzy, and comforted, like mom's home cooking on a cold night. I immediately felt social, funny, and everyone started to look really cute. I felt like a grown-up. I drank to the point where I blacked out, not knowing what this was at the time. For years, it was an ongoing joke because I didn't remember the conversation I had with my family once I had gotten home. Ever since that experience, I always assumed that for anyone drinking, it automatically meant that there was a loss of memory, or blackouts as we call them. I had no idea that this does not happen to everyone. For the next 3 years, I practiced to become a professional drinker. The consumption progressively became more frequent. More parties, more booze, more blackouts. Looking back, I would be internally devastated when the party was over at the end of the night. But then it was all fun and games. I began the experimental stages of trying drugs, which seemed to increase my desire to party, which of course led to more alcohol. By 17, I was drinking daily, at house parties, bars, in cars, movie theaters, and even the local shopping mall. Anywhere I went, drinks were involved. One night, with a group of friends, we thought it would be the cool thing to do and chill at the mall and drink a beer. As we stood at the back corner of the dark parking lot, where it's not suspicious to hang out or anything, we cracked open the first beer. At the same moment, the mall patrol comes over to ruin my day. Not only that, this rented cop began calling the police because we were drinking. How dare he? Doesn't he know who I think I am? I argued that we weren't drinking, that we just somehow found the beer. It wasn't ours. This didn't stop him from proceeding to call the cops, so I started to throw a fit. like a raging lunatic. I cried, threw a tantrum, checked my phone, kicked the car, cried some more. I felt I had a pretty good argument, but the cops could see past my bullshit. I was cited for minor possession of alcohol, and the officers called my mommy to come pick me up. By the grace of God, I did not face any charges. Back then, I was under the impression that I was just that slick. I had one another run-in with the cops, Border Patrol to be exact. I was on my merry way to go to a party. Yes, from California to Arizona to party. It was supposed to be really fun. I was driving my car, and the high school friend that was with me had a pretty hefty amount of weed on him. Of course, the dogs picked up the scent. We got pulled over and searched, and I ended up in handcuffs. I was detained in a cell with handcuffs on. I'm crying everywhere. My makeup is running down my face and boogers are coming out of my nose. I had never been in handcuffs before. My life was over at that moment and I looked horrible. I had to fix a problem. So I took my hands from behind my back and slipped my feet through them to pull them to the front. At the very least, I could look presentable in a cell. I was caught booger-handed with a stern look from the officers. I immediately caught the feeling that this was not okay. So I proceeded to swing my arms right back around my legs. Then I was met my Miranda rights. That's when I totally lost it. I'm yelling and screaming, no, you can't do this to me. That's when I, because I'm pretty sure that they didn't know who I thought I was either. I was initially charged with multiple federal felonies because I was the registered owner of the car. When time came to, I hired an attorney, and ultimately my case was dismissed because the laws had changed in California. My good old marijuana card was considered valid at the time of the incident. I am fortunate to have not been in the system yet, and this does not make me any better than those that have. I was just meant to walk a different path in life. Some members of Alcoholics Anonymous talk about crossing an imaginary line from a normal drinker to an abnormal drinker. I believe I was on the verge of this line prior to my first drink. Since I have become sober, I look back, and I honestly am pretty sure that I was born an alcoholic. I've heard it mentioned that there are three stages to a drinking career. Fun with problems, and then just problems. Looking back, this was when my fun with problems began. I was 17 and a junior in high school. My attendance at school was poor. I was unaccountable at work. My relationships with family were strained, and I was just a brat. An immature, selfish, self-seeking brat. I got into the Associated Student Body, also known as ASB, as a way I could sign myself out early from school with no need for parents' permission. This also gave me the upper hand when planning school dances, because I could sneak alcohol in and hide it without being caught or questioned from staff. Needless to say, I somehow managed to graduate high school a year early just so I could party. I was such a rock star. Such a rock star, in fact, that on one occasion on Fat Tuesday, I was so drunk, I had to be taken to the hospital to make sure that I wasn't suffering from alcohol poisoning. Yeah, you remember that one, don't you? But I was sent home and suffered all night long praying to the porcelain god. That next morning, I was swearing off alcohol forever once the hangover began. But it didn't cause me to believe I had a problem. And I personally believe if there's no problem, then there's no solution. I just like to have fun. There's no harm in a little party, right? This continued for the next 2 years until I found out I was pregnant. I was 19 years old and scared shitless. Thankfully, while I was pregnant, I wasn't drinking. But damn right, I was still going to those parties to hang out with my so-called friends. Nah, it gets better. That year for Halloween, I dressed up as a pregnant chick, carried around an unopened beer and an unlit cigarette. Lo and behold, I was awarded most realistic costume of the party. Interestingly enough, I really enjoyed being pregnant. I felt so alive and in tune for the first time in my life. I'm pretty sure that being sober had something to do with it. But I didn't have a problem with alcohol, so I didn't realize it then. After my daughter was born, the party started right back up again. Back into the alcohol and back into the drugs. But this time, the drinks got stronger and the drugs got heavier. In these next couple years, I would lose so many close friends. I lost my house because I didn't feel like paying rent. My house was burglarized, and I had everything I had worked so hard to obtain gone in an instant. And rather than stopping, I thought it would be a good idea to quit my job and go back to school. Somehow, I had made it through that semester of college, but it took too much work and attention. After thinking really hard about my situation, I realized that it had to be the place that I was living at that was causing me all these issues. So overnight, I packed up my belongings with no plan, no money, no support system, and decided to move to San Diego. The city would be a much better place to live. And since somehow the same problems found me in San Diego, I had to pack up and move to Orange County. Surely life is better in the OC. I've seen it on television. I was staying afloat for a while I was down there for 5 years. And during this time, I really became a professional drinker. Rather than the house parties and the bars, I went for the lounges and the restaurants because there were classier drinkers there. My boyfriend at the time lived life to its fullest, and we definitely knew how to party. Drugs were only dabbled in, and I would be careful not to get caught, so it was short-lived. I would then clean up my act as a way to control my life because I was still hurt by what happened to me the last time I had used. That started to get old, and childcare was costing me as my soul, so I started to drink at home. And this I liked. I didn't have to drive or leave, and if I was tired, I could just fall asleep on the couch, the floor, outside, and sometimes I made it to bed. Good times. I couldn't understand why I started to cry every time I drank as well. Not thinking that I was adding a depressant to my body, I thought it had to have been because I was so stressed out and overwhelmed with work and the boyfriend. And to fix the problem, I began to drink more. My relationship began to fall apart. All we did was yell and argue, and I would wake up not knowing what I was upset about. Yet again, my bills became unpaid. I would call into work, and my daughter would always be late for school if I even took her. Then I realized something had to change. I had a really good idea, so I quit my job. I left the 5-year relationship, paid my life savings to get out of my house, packed up my belongings, and moved to Los Angeles. I moved in with my dad and his girlfriend to return to college. I believed I couldn't possibly get into any trouble with drugs or alcohol since I would be living with family. Not to mention, I left the sources that were causing me all the problems.
Yeah.
The problem job was gone. The difficult boyfriend was gone. This was reason to celebrate. Little did I know at the time that I had an issue with feeling emotions. I could not handle change. And anything that caused me to feel. So a way of fixing this problem, just drank to drink the problems away. I was scared about moving and unsure I had made the right move. So I found a way to locate drugs. I justified this because everyone needs a extra motivation when packing. But using was just another excuse. When I picked up, it immediately was full-blown and I was using and drinking daily. I was single and a full-time student back in college, and that brought on a new sense of entitlement to everything because I had worked so hard all these years and I deserved it. I gave up so much of my life by quitting my job and moving in with my dad and starting school again. Yeah, right. During this semester of college, I attended study groups. I was particular on the people that I would associate with and made sure that drinking was included during this time so I didn't have to sneak in the drinks. Let's just say there was not too much study going on in that group. Of course, when I drink heavily, my judgment becomes so impaired that I make really crappy decisions. One of those decisions was to start using drugs again. To help me focus late night so I could stay up and do my homework, it was all justified in my head. I never thought I could be so focused on my work. I would write an essay, not like it, write an entirely different one, and then end up using the same essay that I started with. But because I didn't like being too high, quitting wasn't an option. I discovered a new drug in my life, made my pupils a side of pinpoints so people wouldn't know that I was loaded. It gave me the same comfort as the first time I had tried alcohol. And this was the balance in my life. I would control my intake to make it appear as I wasn't loaded. My vodka was mixed with orange juice, since you can't smell vodka, right? And I only allowed myself to drink so much before class or else I wasn't productive enough. And I hated myself even more than before. Every hit, every drink, I recall shaking my head with utter disgust. I knew what I was doing was wrong. I wasn't there for my daughter. I was only satisfied with pleasing me. Fights were starting at home. Some nights I just wouldn't come home to avoid confrontation. The more I felt sorry for myself, the more I drank and used not to feel. But in fact, I only felt more. I knew I needed help to stop using drugs. But alcohol wasn't my problem, drugs were. I didn't need to give up alcohol because everybody drinks. It's normal. I couldn't stop using. And I drank even more. Again, I accomplished this semester making the dean's list. And the only reason that I point this out is that under the influence I can do so much, but in all reality, it just makes me grasp for the amount of things that I can do while being sober. So I had to, you know, kind of add that one in right there. Which showed me that drugs and alcohol weren't my problem at all. Look at what I could do loaded. I was able to function, as we call it. This feeling was short-lived. I became overwhelmed with feelings of disappointment. I lost interest in everything around me, and I could hardly put on a smile anymore. I began losing my hair. My skin became frail, and I had no more weight to lose on my body. I was shaking throughout the day. Oh, merci, merci. I was shaking throughout the day, paranoia started to set in, and I was constantly beginning to think how life would be better without me in it. Then the days passed. I became more isolated. I avoided my family. I rarely got my daughter to school yet again on time because I couldn't get out of bed. My life was a mess, and I needed help. That's where it gets good. July of 2015, I took a week vacation to spend my mom's birthday with her. I flew from LAX to San Luis Obispo, and immediately my mom knew something was wrong. Being that I have always been had a pretty open relationship with her, I felt comfortable enough to tell her what was going on. I told her I was using and I needed help. My mom had no idea what to do, but as always, she did the best she knew how. She took care of me while I attempted to detox and tried to be there for as much as I would let her. I was mixed with so many emotions because I knew the drugs were causing me to feel depressed and were taking over my life. During this time, I laid in bed with bottles of wine next to my bedside. I woke up drinking and was carrying around a bottle with throughout the day and fell asleep hammered. My justification for this was that it wasn't as bad as doing the drugs. A family member knew a friend of Bill W.'s and asked to see if she could get me to a meeting. Willingly, I agreed. This lady came to my house, picked me up, and took me to my first meeting. As I just washed down the last of my drink before she showed up at my door, I proceeded to tell her that I did not have a problem with alcohol. I only had issues with drugs. She told me to just fill in the word alcohol with whatever fits. Now that I could do. She said it with a smile and proceeded to walk me to the car. She was happy and so full of life, but why? I was jealous of what she had because I didn't have it. She brought me M&Ms and water. She told me, "You're gonna need the sugar, kid." I had never met someone so nice. I was skeptical of what she wanted from me, but I would figure it out later. I walked into this meeting with more extremely happy people that welcomed me from all angles. What the hell did they have to be happy about? Isn't this a meeting for drunk people learning how to control their drinking? I've been so unsuccessful at this. How did they have all the answers? I looked around the room and took every single person's inventory. In my head, I judged them. I labeled them and was under the impression I was so much better than them because I was fine. This is how messed up I was. I was asked to read chapter 3, more about alcoholism. How appropriate. I had no idea what I had gotten myself into, but I went with it. Since I was totally hammered, I had no idea how it sounded or if I was slurring my speech. But while reading that, I felt that I was reading a page written straight from my heart. A piece of my soul was on that page. And how did they know about my struggles? As I was reading, I began to cry. Not even I could figure myself out. How did this piece of paper know me? I introduced myself as a newcomer. What had I done? I just labeled myself as an alcoholic. So I cried some more. The alcohol really started to kick in. As the members shared, I started to realize that they were all sober. And for more than a day? Is this even possible? There's no way that people actually do this. I came to the conclusion that they were all really good liars. Once the meeting was over, a gentleman handed me a big book. This one to be exact. I told him I could not afford to pay for it. He said he didn't want the money. It was a gift. This man and others from the meeting gave me their phone numbers and reminded me to call them if I ever needed anything. These people could not be serious, but I accepted with a gentle thank you. The lady took me home. She stated that she would be at my house the next morning at 6:30 a.m. to take me to my next meeting. I agreed politely with reservations that I was not going. She kindly dropped me off, and back to the bottle I went. At 6 a.m. the next morning, I sent a kind message thanking her for her time, but that I would not be attending. I felt like resting. So deserved. She did not pressure me to go, but suggested that I attend a meeting with her that afternoon. My response? I'll let you know how I'm feeling later. Yeah. As promised, I sent her a text later that day to not have her come pick me up, but I also informed her that my life was falling apart. Life was not going the way it was supposed to, as decided by me, and I didn't feel well. I was told, your pity party is over now. Get up and go to a meeting. This lady had no idea who I thought I was, did she? Not even my parents ever talked to me in such a fashion. Needless to say, this was the last time I talked to her for quite some time. I kept her number, but decided that she would call me when she wanted to apologize. I love that. Yeah. Days later, it was time for me to fly back to Los Angeles. I felt like death. My buzz was wearing off, and I was in physical pain from detoxing. My plane was delayed a couple hours, which felt like an eternity. In searching for something to pass the time, I looked through my bag and found the big book. I opened the book and started to read. I read the story of the Jaywalker and how he kept doing the same thing over and over again and kept getting more injured. I felt I could relate. I continued to read until the plane landed. Then the book went right back into my bag. My ex-boyfriend had come to pick me up. This is the boyfriend from earlier because our relationship fell apart. Had come to pick me up from the airport to ensure that I would not head straight to my dealer's house. And he took me to his home. I slept for the next 3 days. As he went to work, I was left alone and bored out of my mind. I had nothing else to do but read my big book. I began to question myself and my actions. Was I an alcoholic? I continued to read. I was invited out for lunch with my boss and his family. And since these were my old drinking buddies, drinks were already on the table. I had brought up the idea that I thought I might be an alcoholic from what I had learned from the book. He comforted me and reminded me that I had issues with drugs, not alcohol. This was a satisfying answer. My drinking was officially justified. It did not take long for me to be so drunk that I started an argument with him, hoping he would tell me to leave so I could go get loaded. This never happened, so I decided to pack my bags and leave willingly. He kept trying to keep me at the house because he knew what my plan was. He refused to let me leave, so I had an idea. I had the drugs delivered like a Domino's pizza. It took him a while to catch on, but he did. Once the drugs started, my alcohol consumption increased drastically to cover up the fact that I was using. My depression began to increase as well. I again had made a mess of my life. And this time, there was no way out. Everyone knew my secret. Family, friends threatened to throw me in rehab. But rehab is a place for losers, not people like me. I was trained in school to help people in recovery, not need it myself. I can do it on my own. But in all reality, I couldn't. I had no idea how to stop. So into the vicious cycle of drinking and using, I went again. This lasted a little over a month, until I could hardly handle any part of my life. On September 24th, 2015, I felt the only way out was to die. Because I had been having these feelings for so long, it must meant that this is the best solution. And since I knew everything and was a better thinker than most, I proceeded to wash a bottle of prescription meds down with a handle of whiskey. I was rudely interrupted by my ex. At this point, I did not care. I had no feelings besides happiness that I had found a way out. He took away the pills and the alcohol and dumped it. All of it. How dare he? I thought. I paid for that bottle and that bottle was mine. This was where the anger really started to set in. I began throwing household items, putting my hands on him physically just to leave me alone. I was pushing him out of my way so I would have enough time to lock myself into the bathroom so I could finish the job. 911 was dialed, and I was not about to be thrown in a crazy house or worse, jail. This is where people with problems go. I didn't have problems. The rest of the world had problems with me. I decided to use my master manipulation skills to my benefit. I would clean myself up and get in the shower. I was starting to nod off, but I was capable of covering this up. I had gotten out of the shower just as the paramedics arrived. I insisted that I had no idea what he was talking about, and I was fine. I told them I had been drinking and was just trying to lay down and sleep it off. The officer accused him of filing a false police report, and the next time it happened, he would be behind bars. He left and did not come back. This was my window. I would be able to finish the job. I proceeded to pull myself together and pack a bag. I would pick up my daughter from daycare and head over to my dad's house since he was on vacation. I got to my dad's house and immediately invited my dealer over. I put on a happy face since I did not want anyone else to get in my way. Not that the dealer would, but I had to be sure. Just so happened a friend of my daughter's was having a weekend sleepover with all of the friends. Perfect. I took her over and went back to take care of important business. That weekend I partied, and I partied hard. The two of us went through alcohol like it was water. Not realizing the days passing, Sunday came before I knew it. Ayla was coming home. Thoughts came over me. What had I done? I am worthless, incapable of being a parent. Never planned on being a drug addict when I grew up. I was supposed to be a doctor or something important so others could see how brilliant and awesome I was. The sadness, hopelessness, and shame set in. The alcohol was going down quicker than ever. The only way I saw fit was to leave this world for good. I set my daughter down at the TV and I locked myself in the bathroom. Here I found all the tools needed to be successful. Knowing about medication helped me ensure that if I made it to the hospital, there was no pulling me out. I would be a goner. Everyone was better off without me. I always screwed everything up. I couldn't do anything right. I quickly drank 3 bottles of wine, took multiple bottles of medication, and loaded up on what was left of my drugs. I stopped feeling. There was no turning back. I started to feel my breathing become delayed. I was sweating profusely, and my heart was slowing down. I couldn't see. I could hardly stand. I called my mom to say my goodbyes, placing blame on her that this was all her fault, just so I didn't have to be angry at myself. I felt my body starting to shut down even more. My daughter comes up to me and asks, "What's wrong? What had I done? She does not deserve this. She never even asked for any of this." The closest person near me was my ex-boyfriend. In a calm manner, I asked him not to call the police, but to please come over and take me to the hospital. He was an hour away, but made it before I had gotten any worse. He dragged me to the car. My daughter was screaming and crying, not understanding what was going on. I vaguely remember getting to the hospital and trying to sign myself in at the counter. I sat down in a chair, and the last thing I remember in the lobby was my daughter screaming because I apparently fell into the lady next to me. I was motionless and unable to control my body. I remember being lifted up and placed on a gurney, unable to open my eyes to see anything around me. I was fading in and out. I attempted to bat off the nurses as they stuck me with needles and a catheter, but I was too weak. The last thing I felt was that I was drooling on myself, and an overwhelming feeling of darkness had come over me. I was cold, I was sad, and I was unable to cry. It was time to face the music. I did this to myself. This is what I chose as a solution to my problems. I had killed myself. What felt like my last breath turned into the most excruciating feeling I have ever experienced. I screamed. My skin and organs began to burn. From head to toe, I was able to open my eyes once again to see an entire group of medical staff standing all around me. "Welcome back," was what they told me. Still overcome with a burning sensation, yet shivering because it felt like I was placed in a freezer. The nursing staff explained to me what had happened. And then the tears set in. What did I do? The depression was immediately worse, but I had no desire or strength to ever go through that again. I just wanted it to all go away. I continued to cry for days on end. My ex stayed with me, unsure of what to do. He called my family, and they were willing to take me in. I was in pain. I couldn't move. Tired and depressed, I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to sleep. Without any of my belongings, he threw me in the car and drove 4 hours to drop my ass off. Best decision he ever made, if you ask me. I slept. My daughter was cared for, and the only request from family was for me to get better. Within a week, I was on my feet, helping out around the house, trying to be productive. I decided to go back to school and look for work. I was seen by a psychiatrist and diagnosed with major depression disorder. I was prescribed antidepressants, which seemed to work wonders. Months passed and I found a job, started school, and felt like I was a productive part of society. I was ready to give up the drugs. I didn't want anything to do with them. But giving up the alcohol forever? I don't have a problem with alcohol. And so the drinking began. Didn't seem to bother me too much. I would limit myself on the amount I consumed. And even if I felt like a... Oh, wait, hold on. Okay. I would limit myself on the amount I consumed and even felt like I deserved a badge when I wouldn't finish the drink to the bottom of the glass. As with any alcoholic, this progressed quickly. On New Year's Eve 2015, I got off work at 11 p.m. and offered to be the sober driver for a few friends. I waited at the bar. I remember only having one drink before the last stroke of 12, and then I remembered nothing. I woke up sick and vomiting, with torn clothes and no recollection of what had happened the night before. I proceeded to go home and thought nothing of it until I saw the bruises covered my body. What the fuck had happened? I called my mom and she met me at the hospital, unsure of what had happened either. I was evaluated, tested, and sent home. Drugs were in the system. I was devastated. I had just passed 90 days of no drugs and now this? I had no way of handling the news. I felt violated. I felt a part of me was missing. Since I don't know how to handle feelings and emotions, I quickly returned to the life of drugs. The alcohol began to increase to numb the pain. I felt ashamed for using again and what I put myself through before. But it wasn't all that bad, right? There were some good times in there. And just because I tried hurting myself once doesn't mean that I'll ever feel that way again. Boy, was I wrong. Once the consumption was on a daily basis, the medication stopped working, my antidepressant stopped working, so I stopped taking it. I started to feel that overwhelming feelings of sadness again. My attention drifted from my family, and I began to isolate. On February 13th, 2016, my daughter walked up to me in tears. I asked her what was wrong. She stated, "I am sad because I don't want to see you in the hospital again." I had stopped dead in my tracks. How does she know? What does she know? I looked at her and was overcome with a moment of clarity. She has not seen me using and drinking, and she sees the same thing in me as she had before. I cannot do this to her again, and I needed help. Still not convinced that I was an alcoholic, I looked for rehabs that were as far away from home as possible. I found one in Florida. My insurance would cover part of the expenses, but not my housing. I had blown all my money and had just enough for a plane ticket. The staff could hear the desperation in my voice. I begged if there was any way I could work in return for treatment. I would be willing to do whatever it takes. The next day, I got a call back. My cost of living would be covered on a scholarship, and detox was included. But I needed to buy the ticket to confirm that I was actually going to go. I purchased my ticket and was set to leave on the 16th of February. On February 14th, I contacted my boss, asking her to talk to her in private. I had to tell her everything. I knew my career was on the line if I didn't do something and fast. We met at a coffee shop, and I broke down in tears, explaining I had just relapsed and I planned to get help. I would just need to take some time off. I was prepared to be immediately terminated, but she didn't fire me. She said, "Let me know when you're better." I knew I had only one shot at making this right. Since I was going straight into detox, I figured there was no reason to get sober. For the next couple days, it was party time. I wanted to have my last hurrah. I was more unaccountable than ever. I made promises to my family with no intentions on keeping them. It was about all about me and what I wanted to do. I was so caught up that day that I was supposed to leave with my so-called friends that I caused myself to miss my flight. I was devastated. Why wouldn't the plane wait for me? I wasn't that late, okay? When I drink, I believe my world comes to an end. I threw my bag, yelled, cried, and stomped out of the airport. Thankfully, the family I was with had more sense than I did and was able to get me on a flight out of Santa Barbara. If I hadn't have got onto that plane, I had a feeling I would never get help. Everyone was destined to get me into rehab. As the plane took off, I knew there was no going back on this. I knew I had to make a change or I would lose everything I loved. I knew I was now at risk of losing my daughter, my sanity forever, my job, my support from family and friends, if I didn't do everything in my power to stay clean. After 24 hours of flying through 5 flights, I was getting ready to land in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It was announced we would be getting ready to land, and I had one last chance for a drink. I rang the call button for the flight attendant, and she approached me. So I asked, "How many shots do you think I can get in before we land?" The absolute look on this disgust on this lady's face was a huge wake-up call. Oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. I went through detox and transferred into a partial hospitalization program where I began learning about recovery. I sat down with a psychiatrist to discuss some of my issues. He began to inform me that most alcoholics will end up in jails, institutions, or dead. I sat up in my chair and said, "Thank God none of those have happened to me." He looked puzzled and replied, "I hate to inform you, but this is an institution." This was when I knew the big book was right. I now ended up just like most all other alcoholics. I mentioned that I knew some stuff about the big book and the program of AA. He smiled and asked, "If you know so much, what is written on the first page of the big book?" Having no clue, I used my best answer, "The title page." His answer? Nothing. Nothing is listed on that first page, and that is about as much as you know about Alcoholics Anonymous. Another realization, I knew absolutely nothing. I don't know how to stay sober. I don't know what to do to not pick up. Then I was able to humble myself and become teachable. I needed to take everything I thought I knew and throw it out the window. Just like learning a new language, you cannot walk into a class to learn Japanese and bullshit your way through it. It's either you accept you know nothing and practice to learn it, or you won't get it. During my time in rehab, I began repairing my relationship with my daughter. I owed it her the world. I would talk to her daily on Skype. I would wake her up for school, and she would put me to bed since there was a 3-hour difference. I started writing her letters and sending them out every couple days, with pictures and coloring pages and notes to remind her that I'm getting better. She didn't trust me. She had every right not to. I had let her down my entire life. This girl has never known me sober. I continued program for the next month until I got a call from my employer stating my employment would be terminated as of March 7th and my insurance would drop. This created an unexpected crisis. What now? Acting on impulse, because I don't do that often, I discharged from the facility and decided to find sober living to try and get into an outpatient program. I was determined to make it work my way with no consideration to suggestion from others. I was always facing a brick wall, and rather looking for an easier way through it, I believed I needed to prove others wrong and dig through it with 2 metal spoons. This did not cause me a desire to drink, but I was going to make this work. I found a sober living and attended multiple meetings a day in AA in between looking for work. After a couple days of doing this, I remembered that there was AA at home. Since I had already broken down my fear of checking into rehab, now I felt I could try to be sober at home. But I was scared. I had the help and support of my family since I was trying to change my ways. And homeward bound I went. I located an outpatient program in the area to give me some extra support. I found meeting schedules for anywhere that I could get in. I contacted the lady who took me to my first meeting and asked her to be my sponsor. I knew I couldn't get anything around her and I needed structure. I located a meeting on the Mesa when I was 31 days sober. It was time for a new chip. As I walked into the club, the gentleman that had given me the big book was there, and we started a friendship right off the bat. This man presented me with my 30-day chip and every chip since. It took me traveling 3,000 miles to realize that all I needed was home. AA is the only free program that I know of. I don't need to use insurance to cover the cost, and if I cannot afford a couple bucks for the seventh tradition, I will not be kicked out. I am only asked to have a desire to stop drinking. Initially, I was trying to figure out why I had to suffer from the disease, why others can drink in peace like gentlemen. Now that I think of it, why not me? I have tons of self-knowledge about recovery through school, but it has not helped me one bit to stay sober. Now that I am sober and was helped by so many people to get to this point, I have a chance to give it back to someone else needing support. I realize in this journey, it will be easier for me to stay sober than to go out and try and get sober again. And if I do go out, I have no idea that I would ever make it back. It scares me that I am only one drink away from a train wreck. But it scares me in a healthy way to stay in the center of these rooms. Staying sober is simple but necessary. Am I done with time or can I finish this? Finish it? Okay, all right. Staying sober is simple but not necessarily easy. But I am willing to put as much effort, if not more, into recovery than I did when I was out there getting loaded. When I initially found myself in the rooms of AA while in Florida, members would ask me which of the 12 steps I was on. Of course, I did not have an active sponsor at the time, nor was I working any of these 12 steps. But I read the list and felt that it would be easy. Step 12 was my response with 5 days of sobriety under my belt. Yeah, heads were turning. And I'm pretty sure they could see right through me, but accepted me nonetheless. The 12 steps were like a shopping list for me. Admitted I was powerless over alcohol? Check. Came to believe a powder greater than myself could restore me to sanity? Nope. Never insane to begin with. Turn over my will to God? Nope. Step 4, making an inventory of myself? That was out of the question. 5 through 10 seemed to be boring since I never hurt anyone, but the meditation in step 11? Nah, that sounds fun. You get the idea. I had no idea what the steps were until I started working them. In the meetings I went to, I did not hear the message that was being discussed because I couldn't relate not having working the steps. When I came back to Santa Maria and got together with my sponsor to work steps, I began to hear and relate to what people were actually saying in the meetings. Today, I am not only working through the steps, but I live the steps. I apply them to all people in all situations I face. I was told the 12 steps will keep me from killing myself, and the 12 traditions will keep me from killing you. I now understand why the steps are in the format that they are. Working through each step has given me more freedom and has lifted the burdens I have carried with me throughout life. I have worked steps 1 through 9 so far with my sponsor. So far, step 9 has given me the most freedom in recovery. I have worked to forgive and love myself since I have to accept and live with the decisions I have made. I have taken responsibility for my actions. Thoughts and behaviors because they were mine. I used to think I was a victim in life. I had learned that I played a part in most all situations. And making direct amends, I was able to ask forgiveness in the part that I played in others. Through this, I have been able to build newfound relationships with those closest to me. Today, I wouldn't trade my life, my faults, my family, and my choices for anyone or anything in the world. For each step, I've put my all into them. Whatever she asked me to complete, I have done, because I am all out of reasons and excuses not to. Today, I take direction. I don't have to like what I hear, but I now check myself and think of why I don't like what's being said. Most likely, it's because it's the truth. My sponsor has played a huge part in my recovery, and God willing, she continues to be by my side. She has prepared me for each day I face because she was once in my shoes, like getting ready to prepare this speech tonight. She told me a long while back that feelings will come up and rip my heart out once they set in to the destruction I had actually caused. She shares her experience as examples, so I do not have to make the same mistakes over and over. When writing about how I attempted suicide, my body began to react. My hands were shaking, I turned clammy, and I began to cry. And the first thing I did was contact her, because that's what she asked of me. Not to pick up a drink, I called her. And I contacted others that were sober support in my recovery as well. Today, that phone doesn't weigh 1,000 pounds when I need help. Asking for help is something that the program of AA has made possible for me to do. I tried so many times to take life on by myself, and I failed just as many times as I tried. It takes a village to raise a child. It takes a fellowship to keep me sober. Life isn't about me anymore. It's about us as a whole. Service has been the one way that I have been able to help others at the same time of helping myself. It is a rewarding feeling when I help someone. When I first stepped foot in the rooms, I would ask if there was anything that I could do to help. I would volunteer to read, clean up, wash cups, wipe towels, whatever I could do to be of service. Why? Because people with time were doing this. I want what they have. So I was told I needed to do what they did. If someone with 25 years was washing dishes and that it might help keep me sober, damn right I was going to do the same thing. At 3 months, I was nominated to become secretary of a meeting. I was hardly getting through my steps, but I was told commitments help for accountability to stay sober. Granted, if someone with more time and experience was nominated, I would have understood that it's not just my time yet. After taking it up with my sponsor, I agreed that taking that commitment opened the door to other ways that I could be of service. I started going to district meetings after hearing there was a position open. I would go to steering committee meetings and meetings for central office because I wanted to be in the middle of the herd. I want to understand how AA works, and by going to these meetings, I am also learning about the traditions and concepts. I volunteer to help in any way that I can, and it's not to brag about what I'm doing, it's to show you that anything is possible for newcomers like myself. Coming to AA, there is one thing that I was never sure to grasp, and that was the God concept. My take on God was based off of what I knew from religion. I knew if I sinned, I would be punished. Well, I had already done that during my first confessional. So the God concept was far-fetched. But I thought about it. What do most churchgoers and most AA members have in common? They are happy and grateful for what they have. But they also both believe in God. I was told in the AA that it's a God of my understanding, nobody else's. And I could work with that. I planted just a tiny mustard seed in a belief of God, and it blossomed. I began to pray. I didn't believe in prayer at first. If anything, I used to pray as a bargaining chip to get me out of trouble. God, if you'll let me get out of this just one more time, I promise to be good. I'm pretty sure that God knew my bullshit, but he had a plan for me instead. The more I prayed, the more I believed. The more I thanked God for all that I had, the more I had to be thankful for. Today, I pray in the morning. I thank God for waking me up. I ask God to give me whatever it takes to stay sober, just for today. And I ask that if I cannot help someone, please don't let me hinder them. Throughout the day, I pray for thanks and the ability to practice love and tolerance. At night, I pray again for thanks for letting me get through the sober day. My God doesn't care what I'm doing when I pray, as long as I pray. Sometimes it's hard for me to pray. And I try to pray, and I begin thinking of 500 things at the same time. I pray that God hears the message from my heart. My God has grown from a mustard seed into a size that is not measurable. And my God, to me, feels like the warm rays on sun, on your skin in the sunlight. My God has a plan for me and is the center of my life. Alcohol is only a symptom of my disease. I suffer from an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. If I put alcohol into my system, adverse reactions will occur. And if I take away the alcohol, what am I left with? Me. I am the problem. And if I don't continue daily to work on me and the connection I have with God, there is a good chance I will turn back to alcohol as a solution for me. I've learned the best place for me to stay is out of my mind. My best thinking got me into situations, and that never had good outcomes. I don't have all the answers today. I am grateful for this because it helps me remain teachable. I do not have to play God today. I am thankful for that because those are shoes that I cannot fill. I do not have control on everything today, and I have found peace and serenity from not doing so because I now live in the moment and enjoy the simple things. Today I am present. Today I love myself as I love others. Today I forgive as those who have forgiven me. Today I am me. I feel like me. I have the tools and support to change it. I have a genuine people that care about my well-being that were once total strangers to me. AA has given me these people, these feelings, these thoughts. Because people are here for the same reasons, to get sober and to help other alcoholics to recover from alcoholism. I am happy, giving, and accepting of all those around me. In the meetings, I immediately felt at home, and for the first time, I didn't owe an explanation to anyone because they already understood what I had been through. My story had already been told because we have all faced similar situations. I have realized in the last 7 months about how to be me. To be the person that God created me to be in the first place. I was told when I first got sober that life was not about me, that the struggles that I might face in life, mental illness and substances, weren't for my benefit, that maybe it's a purpose to help someone else going through the same thing that I had. Being here today and sharing with you all, I hope you heard a part of my story and part of your story and mine. and I pray that my experience, strength, and hope will benefit someone to help recover from alcoholism. Thank you. Thank you.